Hello, I'm John Perry.
And I'm Ken Taylor. Thank you for downloading this episode of Philosophy Talk. Your support helps keep our program on the air and online.
Visit our website, philosophytalk.org, to keep up with the latest downloads and upcoming features.
And as always, thank you for listening.
And thank you for thinking.
Welcome to Philosophy Talk, the program that questions everything
except your intelligence. I'm John Perry.
And I'm Ken Taylor. We're coming to you from the studios of 91.7 KALW, local and innovative public radio for San Francisco.
Continuing conversations that begin not at Memorial Church, but at Philosopher's Corner on the Stanford campus, just a stone's throw away from Memorial Church.
And Philosopher's Corner, we migrate to the air via the signals of this lovely station and our growing number of affiliates. And from the air, we migrate to the internet via our blog, the blog.philosophytalk.org. I've already posted an open invitation for all you believers and non-believers to post your reasons on our blog for either your belief or disbelief. And you can also send us comments. So, John, do you believe in God? And why? Or why not?
Well, you know, to be honest, sometimes in my life I've believed in God, and sometimes in my life I haven't believed in God, and most of my life, I've believed in God defined one way and been pretty skeptical defined another way.
No, you seem so wishy-washy. Way. Isn't belief in God, here's a proposition, belief in God is irrational, illogical.
I don't see that. I mean, there's different things you could mean by irrational. If you mean, I don't believe that existence in God, I don't believe that God is proven by any a priori or logical argument like Anselm's ontological argument. But you might say it's irrational if you don't think it's rationally demanded, but that's not irrational. You might say irrational means, well, it's not only rationally not demanded by logic, but even if you throw in all the empirical evidence you have, you don't have to believe in God. It's not the simplest explanation of all the evidence. Or you might mean that reason and evidence absolutely precludes the belief in the existence of God. I don't believe the latter.
So you think, I mean, lots of people think, they believe in God on the basis of what they take to be logic and evidence. And lots of people disbelieve in God on what they take to be logic and evidence. And you think that's kind of like a draw or something. And neither the argument nor the evidence settle it. And it's all right to kind of make this, it's not irrational anyway, to make this kind of leap of faith kind of thing, to go out beyond the evidence. I mean, I think there are times when it's all right to take a leap of faith, but I think maybe in the case of believing in God, we take this leap of faith out of wishful thinking or something like that, or self-delusion.
Well, it could be not, but we need to make some more distinctions. There's also the question of what God is that you do or don't believe in. I mean, I think some conceptions of God are pretty excludable by reason. The Christian Trinitarian God, it may be that it makes sense, but it may be that it doesn't make sense. The God of the Old Testament, who had a physical being, was angry most of the time. I don't see any overwhelming reason to believe in. I mean, it seems to me that there's a lot of evidence that such a God doesn't exist. But there's other conceptions of God where, to me, it's not so clear.
Oh, you mean like God is maybe the sum of all natural things or something? Like God is just a universe or God is just nature? Maybe. You're right. But then that's not a very demanding kind of God.
There are these conceptions of God, like Paul Tillich, you say God is ultimate concern, that are not very demanding. But I don't think most ordinary people have that in mind when they talk about God.
Let's put that proposition to the test. And to help us do that, our roving philosophical reporter, Ruzin Chen, went out and prowled the streets of Berkeley looking for what people thought about God and their reasons for thinking about it. She files this report.
Yes, I believe God exists. It's a feeling that I have deep inside that tells me that there's something greater than myself out there.
If you're talking about a Christian God, I definitely don't believe in that because I was forced to go to church for 18 years of my life and it was pretty terrible. I think in about middle school, I figured out that I didn't believe in all this stuff they made such a big deal of believing. I mean, things that are true, people don't make a big deal about believing.
Well, I grew up Catholic. For a long time, I went to parochial school. I was definitely taught the doctrine, and but I didn't really start believing until after my mother passed away when I was very young in high school. And that, I think, changed my whole viewpoint on whether a God or a higher power existed. I was angry for a long time, but after about maybe 5 or 6 years, I don't know, I just started seeing things from a different perspective.
If there is a God and it's a benevolent God And it's a God that we need to recognize in order to live well. Why would he hide from us?
I wouldn't say a God, but I definitely believe there's a spiritual connection that we all share. The universe is just so amazing that you look in nature and how beautifully things work together, and the fact the sun comes up every day to me is a sign that there's something way more powerful in the world than anything I can imagine, and that to me shows me that there's something that is the what I would call a spiritual connection, even on a very small level. When you get to particle physics, the fact that atoms and electrons work together to create space and matter, that too is an example that something's going on.
I do not believe in the existence of God. I believe in some sort of... No, I don't even believe in that. I believe in the humanity of man. I was raised as a Jewish person in a family that assumed that God was there. So there was no question of do you or don't you believe. They just assumed that you believed, and I grew up with that. But as I got older and I started to think about this, it sort of became a mythology to me, and I put it in the category of other mythologies.
I believe in a universal power behind us. I think there's many meanings attached to God. I wouldn't restrict a certain meaning, but there's certain something beyond what we can understand that orders not only our little planet, but the whole universe.
I do not believe in God. I did grow up in a Christian Protestant background, but over the years I have seen no proof, evidence, whatever, of the existence of God. I can't say anything more than that. Where is the evidence?
For Philosophy Talk, this is Rujing Shen.
Where is the evidence? What is the evidence? Thank you, Rujing Shen, and all the nice people, believers and non-believers alike that you interviewed. I'm John Perry, and with me, at least, is Ken Taylor.
You think there's somebody else in this room, too?
The Holy Ghost could be in here.
Yeah.
You never know.
And we're joined by Walter Sennett Armstrong, who's professor and chair of the philosophy department at Dartmouth College. He's co-author of The Existence of God, A Debate. Walter, welcome to Philosophy Talk.
Glad to be here.
Walter, welcome back. Now, listening to the people in Rujing Shen's fine report, they seem to mean a lot of different things by God. Before you tell us whether you believe or don't believe in God, why don't you tell us about the God you do or don't believe in?
Well, sure, you got to start there, because some people just think God is all of nature, or God is all the good things in nature. And I'm an atheist, but I think that nature exists, and I think there are good things in nature. And if God just
well,
means,
there's
well,
hope. There's hope for you then.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good. And
we'll
if God
build
just
on
means,
that. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
If God means what you're ultimately concerned in, then sure. You know, different people have different ultimate concerns, but none of that is going to produce a religion of the traditional sort that seems to be guiding our country and a lot of people in our country.
So
then you need a personal God. You need a God who makes choices and loves you and intervenes in your life, and that's where it gets problematic.
That's my mother. She loves me. She intervenes in my life. She's a person? I mean, that's not enough to make for God, is it?
No, but it's a necessary condition of God. If you don't have personhood, you don't have a God of any traditional sort.
Well, at least no Western traditional sort.
I mean, the Buddha, well, the Godhead of Buddhism is this completely impersonal thing, right? I mean, and it has no will. It just is there. It's kind of the universe. It's not quite the universe, but it's kind of like the ultimate foundations of the universe somehow.
Well, right, but if God just means the universe or the ultimate foundations of the universe, then I think there is a universe and I think it has ultimate foundations, even if I don't know what they are. So it's hard to disagree with that kind of God.
Okay, yeah. So to define our question here, we're going to talk about some conception of God in which we could kind of have a conversation with somebody, say, George Bush, to pull a...
There's a good choice.
Or Jimmy Clark. Jimmy Carter.
Yes, right.
Or, you know, Herb Clark, my friend at Stanford. Or a lot of people.
Well,
that's going to be a personal God. It's going to be a God that has a will, Does it have to be all perfect?
I want to go a little slower though, yeah. Because you know, religion has been around as long as people have been around in some form or other, and God has been many, many different things. There's these polytheistic religions. There's nature worship, you know, among various Indian tribes and native peoples all over the world. I mean, they have all kinds of visions of God. I mean, why isn't that kind of personal God, eternal, omnipotent, all knowing? Ultimate creator of the universe outside of time and space. Isn't that just a kind of late Western kind of arrival kind of thing?
Well, eternal is, sure, and omnipotent and omniscient are, but personal God, sure, polytheists believe in persons. Zeus was a person, you know. Diana was a person. The ancient Greek gods were all persons.
Yeah,
and
but
so
they were
the gods in all
they were persons subject to jealousy and small petty disputes.
My own personal religion at the moment, and it changes every so often, is that if there's anything we ought to worship, it's the earth, which isn't personal, but we ought to kind of personalize it. So that's pretty offbeat. So I'm all for offbeat religions. But we only got an hour here. We ought to talk about the conception of God. That's the big issue on the news right before our program. We heard about intelligent design. They weren't worried about the sum of good things or the Buddha. They were worried about something like this God that Christianity, Judaism, and Islam postulates, a personal, powerful, maybe perfect God that makes decisions about what life is going to be like for humans. Right, Walter?
Exactly. There are probably four main features that I think create the problems that drive atheism. One is that God is supposed to be at once eternal and yet also intervening at particular times to create miracles, answer prayers, and so on. And the second big problem is created by the fact that God is supposed to be all good and all powerful. And yet, it seems to be that there's evil in the world, and it's hard to reconcile our observations of the world with that kind of definition of God.
So first is kind of the problem of immanence and transcendence, and does it make sense to say both? And the second is the traditional problem of evil. If God is so wonderful and he made the world, why is it so crappy?
Yeah.
Exactly.
So, look, we're going to give you lots of times to combat and argue against the existence of God. But let me slow you down. Again, I want to slow you down. Do people believe in God this kind of God for all sorts of reasons? The revealed truth of certain scriptures, right? It makes a certain kind of moral sense of our lives. If there's a God who loves us and directs everything to the good, then we can side with the good by siding with God, who gives us that kind of, you know, and if we believe there's this ultimate moral order, then our lives can have a certain kind of purpose and meaning. I mean, so people believe in this thing for all kinds of reasons.
Well, so Walter's giving
you gave me a bunch of problems, but I want to give you the reasons why people do believe in
this. Yeah, let me suggest, I mean, see if we can sort it out. First of all, there are these a priori, that is completely logical arguments for the existence of God, like Anselm's ontological argument. I noticed that none of Rujin Shen's interviewees appealed to that. Another traditional thing is the argument from design, and a couple of people did say something like that such a wonderful world couldn't have been an accident. And then there's arguments from personal experience. I just feel inside of myself that there is a God, and I always have. I've had experiences like after my mother's death that just led me to believe in God. So there's that kind of argument. And then there's finally revelation. I don't know that we can say much about that here because it really gets into the whole of philosophy of what you're going to say about testimony and revelation. But at any rate, there's a wide range of reasons for believing in God, just as Walter's pointed out, there's several reasons for being pretty skeptical.
Do you think that all those reasons for believing in God are just non-reasons, Walter?
Hooey?
Yes. I think they're all non-reasons, sure. I mean, the Bible says things, but what's the Bible based on? It's based on the testimony of people at the time. You're talking about cultures where people were believing all kinds of things. The more you read about religions in the early period when most of the books of the New Testament were written, or when the books of the Old Testament were written, it doesn't make you very confident in believing in what they say in these particular books that happen to have caught on and passed down.
So, you're listening to Philosophy Talk. Our subject today is the existence or non-existence of God. Our guest is Walter Sennett Armstrong from Dartmouth College.
We've been examining different conceptions of God. Next, we'll zero in on a conception of God that dominates Western religion. God, the all-powerful, all-knowing, supremely loving being existing outside of space and time. Is there any reason to believe in such a God? Are there decisive reasons for not believing in such a God? What do you think? Our number is 415-841-4134.
God, faith, reason, and your calls when Philosophy Talk continues.
Joan Osborne and One of Us. What if God was a holy rolling stone just trying to make his way home? I'm John Perry.
And I'm Ken Taylor. You know, I think that would be explain a lot. It would explain why his creation was so messed up if he was just a schmuck like the rest of us. Anyway, we're talking about the existence or non-existence of God. Do you believe in God? Why? Why not, if you don't? If you do believe in God, have you ever doubted? If you disbelieve, have you ever been tempted to believe? Join us. The number is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134.
Outside the Bay Area, call toll-free at 1-800-525-9917. You can also email us at comments@philosophytalk.org.
And if you're God, you can just write some holy scripture and send it down to us.
Or we will accept a collect call.
Yeah, that's right. So, and our guest is Walter Sennett Armstrong from Dartmouth College. Okay, Walter, let's have at it. You think there is no God. You think, I guess, that all belief in God is irrational. In a nutshell, why do you think there's no, you know, supremely powerful, all-knowing, all-loving God existing outside of space and time?
Good. I'm glad you added that, because I'm not arguing why there's no God at all. Why isn't there? Mainly because there's evil in the world. If God were all-powerful and all-good, we couldn't explain why tsunamis occur and innocent children are born with birth defects and so on. Don't give me free will. Free will has nothing to do with birth defects. And so it's going to be impossible to explain those events in the world.
Well, that's the problem of evil, but this is evil in nature that you're saying. You're saying a supremely loving God, supremely good God, would not make the earth out of plates so that he wouldn't have... Why? I don't quite see that. Why wouldn't he?
Because he's supposed to care about the creatures he created, and that killed hundreds of thousands of people and caused tremendous destruction. If he cares about us and he's able to stop it, he should.
Now, David Hume, my favorite philosopher, and no friend of the Christian religion as such, said about the problem of evil that, well, it really doesn't disprove the existence of God, because if you're antecedently believe in the existence of an infinitely wonderful God, then evil may be hard to understand, but you wouldn't expect to understand it. Why would a finite being like me expect to understand what God had in mind? On the other hand, he admits if you come at it, you know, without an antecedent belief in God, evil is certainly not evidence for the existence of God. Now, why wasn't that a good answer? So why can't we say, well, that's fine. You came at it neutrally, and so you don't believe in God. That's fine. But why should somebody who had an antecedent belief in God think that evil really makes God impossible?
Oh, I don't think it makes God impossible. You can always adjust your beliefs to accommodate any evidence if you're willing to go far enough. Mm-hmm. The point is that if you start from a neutral point of view, not knowing what to believe, not believing for or against God, and then you see all this evil in the world, you're going to reach the conclusion that this evil is evidence against the existence of God.
Well, I grant you that the evil doesn't on its own suggests the existence of God, right? Indeed, the evil on its own suggests the non-existence of God, right? Because you're right, it's on its own. But why should we take the evil on its own? There's not just the evil on its own. There's the order and beauty of the universe. There is the testimony of those who profess to have heard divine wisdom. And there is, if you scrutinize, I mean, I learned this a long time ago, I don't know if I believe it anymore. If you scrutinize nature, You will see it written in God's hand, the laws of nature, their beauty, symmetry, systematicity. Right? I mean, so the evil doesn't suggest on its own the existence of God, but the evil isn't the only thing we're confronted with.
No, but the evil shows he's not all powerful and all good. Just imagine your neighbor, beautiful gardens, well-kept house, nice car. Unfortunately, his kids are dying of cancer. Now, if that were the case, you would say, look, maybe he's very powerful in some ways, but he can't be all good and all powerful, or he'd save his own children from such a horrible death.
Okay, Walter, but let's go back to the idea of the conception of God. Now, not all Christians believe that God is all-powerful. The original battle in Christianity was between the Manichaeans and the Catholic Christians, and the Manichaeans thought that God was doing the best he could with the world that wasn't totally under his control. and modern day Mormons believe in a more finite and limited God. And is the problem of evil a problem for any Christian conception of God, or just kind of this one that came out of the Middle Ages and is very abstract and full of superlatives?
Oh, I think it's just for that particular one, but that's the dominant one. That's the one that arose between the combination of the Greek system, which emphasized infinity, and the Judaic system, which emphasized personal God. You put those two together, you get an incoherent tradition. But that is the dominant tradition today. That's the tradition that George Bush believes in.
Well, look, okay, I'm going to be the voice of the believer here for a moment. Again, I grant you, there is a burden that I have, if I'm a believer, to explain evil. And I grant you that I have a problem, right? Because God is in some ways inscrutable. I ask God, why did you make tsunamis possible? Right? So imagine Job. Why, God, did you do it this way? I would have not included that in my divine plan. And my father always says this to me. He says, you know what God says to Job, son? He says, where the heck were you when I created this thing? That is, where do you get off questioning my divine plan? I have a plan. The tsunamis fit in there. You can't quite see how they fit in, but you're like a child questioning, you know, grown-up wisdom. So what do you say to that, Walter?
Well, I say it's still evidence against it. We have to form our beliefs on the basis of what we know and can figure out. If my next-door neighbor, you know, beats his children and tells me that somehow it's for their own good and I just don't understand, then I have to form a judgment about whether, in fact, to believe him or not. And it seems to me that I can use that evil and my beliefs about how the world works to reach a conclusion and determine what's evidence for what. I'm not claiming that that evidence makes the view inconsistent or logically impossible, but it sure seems to speak against it to anybody that starts from a neutral standpoint.
Okay, I think that we pretty much agree with Hume. I just want to make the point there are these other forms of Christianity. I also like to point out there's a great book on this called A Dialogue on Good, Evil, and the Existence of God. Now, who's that written by? Oh, I remember. Me.
John Barry.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
John Barry. Dialogue on Good, Evil, and the Existence of God. Hackett Publishing. Small and expensive book, makes a great present.
Mark, yeah, but it's not as good as God, A Debate Between a Christian and an Atheist by Walter Sennett Armstrong.
Okay, well, they're both good. They're both fine books. Mark in Redwood City's on the line. Welcome to Philosophy Talk, Mark.
Good morning. What I'd like to add to this is I was an atheist for 25 years, about as much a rationalist and a skeptic as anyone could be, until I had a series of experiences about 13, 14 years ago that I could only take as some sort of a supernatural presence announcing itself to me in a way that I couldn't deny. I can't tell you whether it was a Christian God or a Buddhist God or whatever, but having been brought up a Christian before I rejected that, I sort of have to go within the Christian context. So it's sort of the way Bertrand Russell said he was a Christian atheist, in the sense that he was a product of a Christian society.
So Mark, let me ask you a question now. When you have an experience and you describe it as an experience of this or that, there's two parts to that. I mean, I could say, you know, I had an experience of President Bush. Well, that means I had an experience, and I think the cause of it was President Bush. I could be wrong. Maybe it was his brother or the guy on the Tonight Show that imitates him. Now, you had this experience. Tell us what the experience was like and why you're so sure it was an experience of God.
Okay, like I said, I was a skeptic, and I think this presence, call it God or whatever, that wanted me to know that it was there, took that into account and said, okay, this guy's not going to believe anything that could be attributed to coincidence whatsoever, so we're going to have to just nail him. And what happened was, in as short a time as possible, I bought a pendant, planning to give it to someone as a Christmas gift, and I decided to keep it. I started wearing it. I didn't know the significance of it. It was an arrowhead-shaped thing. And about 2 months later, I had a dream in which I was being chased around a park by some unseen presence. There were various religious symbols around.
Uh-huh.
It could have been taken a lot of different ways.
So it was basically this dream that just seemed you have no other explanation except God is communicating with you.
Yeah, Mark.
No. Let me explain how I know it can't be explained any other way. At the end of the dream, a priest comes out of nowhere, basically, and says we have to do something to make the sagittate more clear. Now, I didn't know the meaning of the word sagittate. I didn't even know if it was a word. I looked it up and found, although it wasn't a noun, it was an adjective which describes an arrowhead shape. So I thought, okay, that's interesting. I wonder if something's going to happen to give some symbolism to this pendant. Then I was sitting at the beach one day reading one of the old Gnostic Gospels. I had gotten interested in those somehow. And I was reading this passage in the Acts of John where it says something about Jesus appearing during the crucifixion to the disciple John and telling him...
Okay, let's wrap it up quickly. I want to get Walter's impression on all this.
Okay, anyway, the bottom line was, while I was reading about a cross of light, a literal cross of light appeared on the page, which turned out to be a reflection of this pendant that I'd been wearing.
Thanks,
okay,
thanks, Mark,
for sharing it.
Thanks, Walter. There's a general point in there that I'd like to press you on. Look, you seem to worship at the altar of reason. The mind has many ways of kind of getting connected to its world. Mystical experiences, experiences that reason can't explain. And God, some believers believe, speaks to us in these ways that aren't just, you know, here's the evidence, here's the argument. What do you think of that?
Well, let me just add to that. I mean, if you had an experience like Mark's, wouldn't you believe in God? Or, if the answer is no, is there any experience along these lines that would convince you?
Well, I think that experience sounded to me like a coincidence, the light on the page off the pendant. And it can get interpreted in certain ways, but I don't see that as being any evidence for a transcendent, eternal, all-powerful God at all.
I grant about that, but is there any kind of experience that confounds reason that might lead you to believe in God?
Oh, sure. If the heavens opened up and some very large person with a beard came down and said, "You're a schmuck," and pointed at somebody I knew as a schmuck, and that guy died, you know, I can imagine experiences that would convert me, sure.
Kristen in San Rafael is on the line. Welcome to Philosophy Talk, Kristen.
Hi, good morning. My thoughts on the subject, I don't believe in God. I've never believed in God, though there are some times when I really, you know, when things are going horribly in life that I wish I believed in God so that I could have, you know, point to some sort of explanation or, I don't know, maybe blame somebody for what's going on instead of having to shoulder all the pain by myself, or, you know, maybe it's wanting to share the pain with somebody. But, you know, I've never believed in God, and I don't know that I ever could.
Thanks, Kristen. You make a good point about belief in God, I think, Walter. Lots of people believe in God because the belief in God is comforting. Gets you through the day in ways that non-belief doesn't. I mean, isn't that... Look, if the evidence is equivocal and you want to act and you want to be in the world, mightn't it not be sort of practically rational? Now, even if, you know, the evidence and the logic don't do it, just you want to live. You want to get through the day. You want to support your projects. Can't belief be rational in that way? That's kind of like...
No, yeah, absolutely. But it's kind of sad. It's like someone whose child is missing in action in Vietnam and has been missing in action in Vietnam since the early 70s, but still has to believe that her son is still alive, because if she couldn't believe that, it would destroy her life. And I'm not going to go up and try to change her belief, because she needs that. But it's kind of sad that somebody needs that in order to get through life and have meaning in their life.
Yeah, but look, we already established, back talking about the problem of evil, that the world is a pretty sad place, at least. I mean, I think it's got a lot of great features, but there's a lot of sad-making features. Don't we have to distinguish between the rationality of the proposition God exists and the rationality of a particular person in their particular circumstances having faith that God exists, believing
yes.
that God exists? Now, is the latter, it seems to me you just admitted, might not be irrational. It might even be rational. It's sad that it might be rational, but it still might be rational.
I'll
I got
even
you right
admit
there?
More than, oh, yes, and I'll admit more than that. Not only might it be rational for reasons of the sort that I mentioned, that you need it to get through the day, but it might even be rational for some people to believe in God on the basis of evidence. After all, if you don't know anything about modern science and you don't know how the world really operates, and the only reliable source you have is your priest and your parents, and your priest and your parents and everybody you know tells you believe in God, and you're only 6 years old, I mean, sure, now it might be rational for you to believe in God. But if you know how the world operates and you've studied science and you know the facts, then it's not going
to
be rational.
Well, just help me out there for a minute. I've studied science a little bit, and what they seem to tell us is that the world is finite. It goes back to a Big Bang, and you say, what happened before that? And they look at you like you're an idiot. Now, how is that supposed to convince me that there's not a God outside of space and time?
Well, that's not, that itself is not going to convince you that there's not a God outside of space and time. But when you talk about God intervening in history with miracles and answering prayers and making things happen that are contrary to the laws of nature, then science speaks against religion.
Inga from San Francisco's on the line. Welcome to Philosophy Talk, Inga.
Thank you very much. There's something nobody ever talks about. If we wouldn't have a soul, we wouldn't have a God. And I guess I never was a Christian because I could not believe that animals don't have a soul. And then I wonder as an adult, when did human beings become a soul? When we walked upright or at one point?
So, Inga, I'm not really following. You think that human beings do have a soul?
Yes, I do believe in souls, but I also believe that all living beings have a soul. But the Christian belief is that only human beings can be possibly go to heaven or to hell.
I understand, Inga. So you think, thanks for the call. Inga thinks, Walter, that this is a debate within the theist camp. Christianity doesn't give enough, doesn't make God and soul and the, you know, present enough. It's more places than Christianity believes. I mean, everything is ensouled and full of daimons, as the pre-Socratic said. You know, well, what do you think about that? I mean, these debates within theology, is there any kind of settling them, or is it all just rational, irrational voodoo kind of stuff for you?
I think it's pretty much all irrational voodoo kind of stuff for me. But part of it depends on what you mean by soul. You know, you can give, if soul means a life force, then all living things have a life force. You know, fine. I'll go with that.
I'm really struck by something you said to John and this. I mean, if we lived in the benighted times, then religion might, and belief in God and this transcendent God might be a form of rational believing. But modernity has driven religion out in such a way that you can only irrationally believe it, except for these kind of practical,
exactly,
comforting reasons. Yeah.
It's like believing in the flat earth, you know?
Yeah.
I understand why people in the Middle Ages thought the earth was flat. They were hearing from certain authorities telling them the world was flat. I don't blame them. Given their sources of information, it's a perfectly rational conclusion to draw. But if you believe that today, we'd run you out of town.
Yeah,
but
look, there's a difference here. We've seen the Earth, and we've got lots of mathematics that's consistent with a globular Earth and not a flat Earth. And maybe certain of the beliefs that are involved in the conception of God you've delineated, like miracles and so forth, aren't very believable. But Christianity includes a lot of people who believe in this transcendent God outside of space and time. Hard to believe to see how that's excluded, but I think we're going to have to take a break now.
You're listening to Philosophy Talk. We're discussing the existence of God with noted atheist Walter Sennett Armstrong.
John Lennon and a list of things he doesn't believe in. His song, God. I'm John Perry, and this is Philosophy Talk, the program that questions everything
except your intelligence. I'm Ken Taylor. We're discussing the existence or non-existence of God with Walter Sennett Armstrong. Join us. A lot of people have already done that, but join us. 415-841-4134. 415-841-4134.
Outside the barrier, call toll-free 1-800-525-9917. That's 1-800-525-9917. Or email us. comments@philosophytalk.org.
Or if you want to join the public debate, post a comment on our blog. We have a kind of open blog entry there for people to talk about the existence or non-existence.
And you know,
of God.
Ken, we've gotten a couple blogs posted just as we've had the show here. It's really an interesting website today.
Yeah, Walter, you know, I mean, lots of theists think there's this thing that Dostoevsky has one of his characters say, if God is dead, then everything is permitted, and the corollary is, and nothing forbidden. And lots of theists think that if you deny the existence of God, you kind of collapse into a kind of nihilism. There's no absolute right and wrong, no meaning, no purpose, nothing's objectively valuable. What do you say in response to that? How do you live as an atheist?
Childish attitude. That's like the kids who think that once their parents are gone from home, they can do whatever they want. The fact that God's not around doesn't mean it's okay to rape and kill and steal. What makes rape wrong is the way it hurts the victim. It's not that God told you not to rape and therefore you shouldn't rape. And if God told you it was okay to rape, then it would be okay.
Why does it
hurting other people?
Wait a minute. That's too cheap. Why does it matter to me? That it hurts the victim if there's no God. I mean, where does that mattering? I don't care about the victim. Big deal. It hurts the victim. So what?
Because you recognize as a rational creature that you have no more rights, no more duties, than other rational people. That person suffers the way you do, and for you to cause suffering to them and then claim that other people, it would be wrong for them to cause suffering to you would be inconsistent.
I think you're just a theist in disguise. I think you think that, okay, there is no God, there's no transcendent of God, but there are these absolutes just sort of written into nature somehow. Nature's just mucking around. I mean, how do these absolutes get written into nature without God?
I mean, look, Walter, if all we got to go on is Mother Nature, it's clear what Mother Nature's game is. Get people to propagate so that other species can eat their children. Now,
yeah,
how do we get a right and wrong based on all these Christian concepts out of Mother Nature?
Nature is red in tooth and claw, as Emerson said.
Okay, you're throwing too much stuff at me at once here. First of all, I'm not a theist in disguise, so I didn't say that morality was based on God. I'm not trying to hide God in there. I didn't even say that morality was based on nature. I said it was based on reason. I said that we can recognize through our own reason that we have no more rights, duties, privileges, and so on than other creatures of the same species with the same rational capacities. They're moral agents like us who can suffer like us, and so we have no reason to prefer ourselves over them.
Let me read something that we got in email that's kind of on your side of things here. Hi, guys. You talk about God and the comfort factor. Can an unforgiving atheist hold believers to task for invoking their belief in old man white beard God as a justification for going to war and killing on a massive scale? Merry Christmas, our old friend Pete in San Francisco.
What do you think of that, Walter?
Well, I think religion has led to a lot of wars, and it's led to a lot of other problems in society as well. Why does the government stop stem cell research? Because of the religious beliefs of the people who are in power. Why do homosexuals get dragged through the roads and killed and tortured? Because people think that it's against their religion for people to love the ones that they love.
Well, now, wait a minute.
Things create all kinds of problems throughout the world.
Walter, are you suggesting that if it weren't for religion, there wouldn't be things like anti-gay bias and racism? That seems extremely implausible to me. Religion may not have always done its best to defeat those things, but I don't think it's the cause of them.
I think that the cause is not a single factor. It's a complex condition. And what happens is religious beliefs and institutions provide a type of organization and focal point for some very problematic beliefs that then get expressed in terms of war and bias and on a level that they would not be expressed otherwise.
Michael in San Francisco is on the line. Welcome to Philosophy Talk, Michael.
Hi, thank you. I just want to say that if evil negates the existence of God, then you must say that good affirms the existence of God, and what you have is a logical equation that balances itself.
That's an interesting point. I mean, I just throw my little Hume in here. Hume said there were four possibilities, right? That God is in favor of pain, and he says the existence of a good suggests that's not so. Or I should say the creators of order in the universe are in favor of humans having pain, but there's too much good to suppose that. That they're wildly in favor of humans not having pain, there's too much pain to suppose that. The most plausible, he thought, was they don't care.
Yeah. So, what did you like Michael's logic there, Walter?
No, because if a God is supposed to be all good, then every bit of evil counts against him. But the bits of good don't count in favor of the claim that God is all good.
God's
that counts in favor of the claim that God's, well, pretty good. He's got some good
things. No. God's universe is all things considered good. I mean, it may not feel good to me at the moment. I may regret it. But God has an overall plan that's absolutely good. But
Which is better than any other possible plan.
I still want to press you on something. You worship at the altar of reason. Reason tells us that these absolute moral truths. I just don't believe it. I don't think reason tells us anything like that. Human reason speaks throughout human history in a cacophony of competing moral frameworks, ends, and all, and it can't be settled by reason alone. If it could, we'd be done. But I think your reason is really just a stand-in. You don't want to admit divine command. Your reason is kind of a stand-in. It's like the voice of God made internal to human life. But, so you really, and if reason can't do that, then I don't think you've won any argument.
Wow.
Well, I think we'll have to have another show on how you can base morality on reason, because that's a topic we don't have enough time left to consider.
That's a very good point.
But it certainly is not referring back to God, because I'm not claiming anything supernatural about the type
You're cheating,
of reason.
Walter. You're cheating. You're trying to get the absolutes in there with something that doesn't have the power to deliver the
absolutes. I admit that I owe you an argument.
Yeah, in all fairness, in an hour, even John Rawls couldn't get his whole argument in. I mean, we do have a debate among some pretty bright philosophers. Kant thought that the best argument for God was that without God, there wouldn't be any, he didn't say basis for morality, but the world would be such an unfair place. So you had to believe in heaven and hell, and that meant you had to believe in God. But a lot of modern philosophers, even some very religious philosophers, don't think you need to base morality of a fairly stringent sort on the existence of God.
Let's see what Marjorie in Richmond thinks. Marjorie, welcome to Philosophy Talk.
Hi, good morning. I mean, afternoon. I believe, my proof of God is me, myself, personally. Just that I have life in me, that is proof of God. And I believe that God is infinite, therefore it never is created. It's not created, and it never ends. Just like energy. Energy cannot be created, nor can it be destroyed. So says science, right?
Well,
in infinity, because when I look up to the sky, I could never see the end of it. And if I close my eyes, I could never see the end of anything. And like people that, they never could come to a time when maybe the pyramids were built, or by who, you know, or everything gets older and older, because everything goes back so far back into what our five senses perceive as time and space, so far back into infinity, that we're just not able to see that far, no matter what technology we use.
Marjorie, that's an interesting point, and we've got an email that I want to read that's right on the same point. I should mention, we're getting a lot of emails. We can only read a very few of them. I'm picking some of the shorter ones that are
seem
to be right on
too.
Target. A lot of calls, too. Here's Michael Zorda in San Francisco, and he says, the flat earth believers believed in a flat earth because that's all they saw. Now, your guest is an atheist because he's like the flat earth people, not like us. He doesn't see enough. To him, seeing is believing. So he's kind of reversing the tables on you, Walter. What do you think of that?
Well, the problem with basing your religious belief on what you see is that different people see different things. If we both look out in the woods and I see a bear and you see a dog and another person sees a deer and another person doesn't see anything, then I don't think we're justified in believing that any of us is right unless we have a reason to think that I see more clearly than you do. Mm-hmm. But there are lots of different religions that have different religious experiences and seem to be seeing very different things, as well as other people who don't see anything. Now, it strikes me that those kinds of experiences are no better evidence for the truth of their object than are when we look out in the woods and see different animals.
Okay, Walter, I grant your point in a way, but you know, I once had a girlfriend who was, I regarded her as luminously good. She was a grand person. She was compassionate, dedicated to the service of humanity in a really deep...
Then why the past tense?
That's a long story.
A girlfriend greater than which none can be conceived.
That's a long
story.
Let me finish. And her religious belief, her deep and sincere religious belief, played an amazing role in her life in shaping her moral outlook. Now, just the fact that there are people like that who deeply and sincerely believe and act in those beliefs in ways that promote the good, doesn't that give us some reason to want to model ourselves on people like that, perhaps?
Oh, I think we should model ourselves on their moral ideals, on their behaviors. I think helping people, and when religious people do that, it's just as good as when atheists do that. The problem is the metaphysical beliefs that they think you need to have in order to support that moral action and those moral beliefs. Let's follow many of the moral ideals in the New Testament and of religions around the world, but let's give up the metaphysics.
Well, think of it more as a practical attitude, like Kant. Think of it as a practical attitude, an attitude of a way in which you orient your yourself through the world. So adopting the God hypothesis is not so much a metaphysical hypothesis, but a way of orienting yourselves to the world, to your life in the world. Why not that?
Well, if all you mean by adopting the God hypothesis is orienting yourself towards the good in the world, then I'm all for it. But that doesn't get you anything like a personal, eternal, omnipotent, omniscient God.
So
that doesn't get you any of that stuff.
We've kind of closed the circle here, that if you make your concept of God weak enough, it's hard to argue against it in any definitive way.
And it's hard to see any reason to worship it.
yes, Carolyn in Sonoma's on the line. Welcome to Philosophy Talk, Carolyn.
Hi, thank you. I had a comment to add, and it was an experience that is kind of unexplainable, so call it what you want. But when my brother passed away, 9 months later, he came to me in a dream and told me what my future was to hold, and everything he told me came true. Where does that come from?
Walter's going to say coincidence, Carolyn, I bet.
Really?
Yeah.
Carolyn, would you accept any kind of scientific explanation? Like maybe these were things that you knew in an unconscious way that took
it
this
was so
form of getting to your
what
consciousness?
I had expected in my life to happen. I mean, these weren't just subtle changes. These were drastic changes that I wasn't even planning on.
So, Walter, what do you think? Did I anticipate
it? I'm very reluctant to explain something without knowing a lot more about it. Maybe your brother knew you better than you knew yourself. That certainly happens with me and my sister sometimes. But I don't see how that supports a belief in God. That supports a belief in your brother's wisdom.
Well, but this is a belief because he crossed over. He wasn't even on the planet anymore.
Yeah.
So he had passed away. It was 9 months later, and I didn't have any expectation of anything. And here he comes to me in a dream and tells me these things. And not only did he tell me what happened to me, he told me, I asked him to give me proof of something in my dream. I consciously asked him to tell me what his significant other was dreaming that night. And I called that person the next day and asked them what they were dreaming, and it was identical. And I did that for my own
Carolyn, that is no doubt an impressive experience.
Yeah.
It would shake me up if it happened to me.
So, Walter, on that note, we're going to have to say goodbye to you. It's been a really great conversation.
I've enjoyed it a lot. Merry Christmas.
Walter, thanks a lot.
Yeah, that's not sincere.
it is. As you're wrong, that's absolutely sincere.
Okay.
Yeah, my view is that Christians should like Christmas because that's when Christ was born, and everyone else should like Christmas because Christians are in such a good mood.
Okay.
And also because of the family that I'm looking forward to seeing tomorrow.
Our guest has been Walter Sennett Armstrong. He's a professor and chair of the philosophy department at Dartmouth College. He's co-author of The Existence of God, A Debate with William Lane Craig.
Well, thanks to all the callers and all the emailers, and we had so many this week, we really didn't get a chance to get to a lot of very interesting callers and emails.
Yeah, sorry if we couldn't put you on. So, John, what did we accomplish today? Did we prove the existence or non-existence of God?
No, I think we had a good conversation. We kind of ganged up on Walter because he's such an effective spokesman for his side. Now, my own views are a little more agnostic than I let on, but basically, lately I've been thinking that even if God existed, the kind of God that the Christians call for, what would be the point of worshiping him? He doesn't need our help if he exists, and if he doesn't exist, he doesn't need our help.
Well, you know,
but worship is such an important human attitude. We ought to worship something. I think we ought to worship the earth. The earth is something that could really use some worshiping. So that's my kind of a paganism.
I think we should care for the earth and treat it tenderly. I don't know about worshiping. It's our home, and it supports our life, so it's a really important thing.
It's a source of everything good about human life.
I think this practical attitude of orienting yourself toward the world through adopting the God hypothesis may have something to be said for it. I agree with Walter, the metaphysics and all that don't work. But you know, we have to live in the world as human beings. We have to orient ourselves toward the world.
Well, we have to, and
it's an instrument for orienting ourselves.
We have to live on the earth, and the earth is responsible for everything nice about human life.
So look, if you want to continue.
Pagans had ethics and worship, so what the heck?
If you want to keep going with this conversation, weigh in on our blog, theblog.philosophytalk.org.
Philosophy Talk is a presentation of Ben Minella Productions and the trustees of Leland Stanford Junior University.
Our executive producer is Gordon Earle.
Special thanks to Rujin Shen, Nicole Sawaya, Ben Temption, and Alan Farley.
Support for Philosophy Talk comes from the Pacific Division of the American Philosophical Association.
Also from various groups at Stanford University, the Friends of Philosophy Talk, and the members of KALW Information Radio San Francisco, where our program originates.
The views expressed or misexpressed on this program do not necessarily represent the opinions of Stanford University or of our other funders.
The conversation continues on our website, www.philosophytalk.org. I'm John Perry.
And I'm Ken Taylor. Thank you for listening.
And thank you for thinking.